We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's time to tee off with Dusty and Friends.
I tell you, I understand it. I'm playing the worst game of my life.
Hey, put yourself down. You're not good. Stink.
It's PGA Championship Week with Dusty and Friends.
Brought to you by Persimmon Country Club. Join Dirt and Sprague June 6th for a day on the course. Secure your tee time now at 1080thefan.com.
PGA Championship Week with Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
No matter what you saw. Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday to you. The 18th of May, 2022. It is Wednesday, which means... Oh, Buck doesn't have my board up.
From the 36 chamber, bring it to him proper, partner.
It is Wu-Tang Wednesday. Welcome aboard. Ryan Buckley is here alongside me as of now. What's up, Buck?
Hi, sir. Well, so I want to point out one thing. You know, coming back to this job after, like a 10 or 12 month absence, everything, it was a little bit like riding a bike, but there was one thing that's different than before, and that was it used to just be one button and fader that controlled both of our hotkeys board, and now there is a button for each of us, and I always forget that you have your own, so when you try to play drops and they don't play, and that is my fault because I'm not used to that one new thing still.
Man, you know what? You know what that is?
That is 7 and 9.
It is. It is. It's barely sub 500 producing right there. That's what it is.
It gets you. You know what? I'll be better. I'll give you a reminder before the show starts now.
Yeah.
All right. Buck is here. It is Wu-Tang Wednesday. Thank you for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours. Today, our friend who will join us at 1 o'clock is Joel Gunderson. He wrote the book on Boise State football. No, quite literally. Literally, he wrote a book about Boise State football, the rise of Boise State's program, and their rise to prominence. Now, he is a host of the Believe in Oregon Football podcast, the Believe Podcast Network, hosts an Oregon football pod. So Joel Gunderson is going to join us at 1 o'clock. Both he and I interned here.
Simultaneously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Joel going to join us at the top of next hour. All right, Buck is wearing your Hella Threes
Hella
shirt.
Threes.
We have the Western Conference Finals starting. You are so thrilled.
I am.
For that.
I didn't think this team was going to be here necessarily.
You see, Luca is drinking beers. He's pounding some beers before the game.
So
lunch beers.
I did hear that.
Lunch beers.
I actually haven't seen it. But the thing was, because I was listening to Colin and Joy on right before this, I guess the tweet today came out at 9:43 a.m. on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So that would mean it's not really even a lunch beer at this point.
Oh,
it's like breakfast beers. But the speculation is that this was yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, there's no way that this is today then.
So that's
because
the thing.
Me knowing the Bay Area, and you can correct me, right guy from the Bay, if this is wrong. There is no effing way that many people are dining outdoors in San Francisco at 9:43 a.m.
I wouldn't think so either.
No. And if they are, they are going to be in jackets, not in, you know, T-shirts, and there's a guy just in a normal dress shirt. No. So that's fine. Am I bad that I don't even care if it is a game day and he's having a beer?
I don't either, but so if you're a fan of a team, and Colin was kind of getting into this a tiny bit, but where would you draw the line, or what would the level be? Could anybody, what if it was your eighth guy in the rotation who you need to hit a three in a big spot? Are you still cool with him having that breakfast beer? You know what I mean?
Breakfast beer is aggressive. Breakfast beer, we have some warnings, but if it's like, all right, you know, he's having a lunch in San Francisco, you know, whatever. He knows his body better than I do. Like, I don't know.
Because I don't personally care either, but you better believe that like if this were a game day, the closer we get to tip off that he's doing this, the more problem, a bigger portion of the fan base is going to start having a problem with it.
So there is there's legendary stories of, you know, Michael Jordan and in his escapades the night before games, but he would also
full blown trips if you ask some.
Yeah, he would also go like before the game as the visiting team was arriving. He would like be sitting out lounging on top of his car, like sitting on top of his car, like leaning back on the windshield, smoking a cigar in like talking smack to guys as they entered the arena before the game.
I love that image. That needs to be true.
Like that is, you want to talk about aggressive moves. You're puffing on a stogie like hours before the tip off. We're not talking like a whole work day before tip.
I mean,
we're talking just a couple hours.
Modern athlete Vlade Divac was rumored to smoke cigarettes during games.
Now, there was was it Mehmet Okur maybe? But I was walking out and it was when the Blazers played the Jazz in the Coliseum for a preseason game. And after the game, like there were a couple of the European players for the Jazz that they were burning heaters right after the game of the Coliseum. But Vlade, we likes the potty. He was loading Doc Famous, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was his thing. I mean, there are still places in Europe where they allow smoking inside the gym for professional games. And you hear stories about, you know, US players going over there and they're like, they're coughing through the fourth quarter because everyone in, I don't know where, Turkey or wherever it is like sitting there in the bleachers smoking.
Just like it's 1950 in the States.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. I actually saw, speaking of those times, I saw a picture of like, it was like, I don't know, one of those targeted ads or whatever on social media, which is like, hey, here's a picture from history, right? And it was like a Pan Am flight from the 70s.
Yeah.
Early, late 60s, early 70s.
I think I know where you're going here. I have questions also.
And like, you know, you got people with like a cigarette in their hand. You're like, that doesn't seem safe. But then you have like everybody's wearing a suit and they're reading their paper and stuff. And my thought was, if I was guaranteed the size of those chairs and the legroom that those people had, I would wear a suit on every flight. I would say if you made it mandatory, if I got my legroom and I got that big old seat, I would wear a damn suit on that flight because there was so much room on those planes.
Dress for flight success. The better you dress, the more room you get.
Yes. Like I'd wear a tuxedo. I'd have like the little penguin flaps on the back if that's what it took. I'd have a top hat and a cane. I would do.
You'd show up looking like Mr. Peanut.
I would.
And then they'd give you a pack of peanuts.
And yeah. And I just think of like, and I remember going on flights, you know, when I was younger and it was like, you'd get a meal. Now it's like you will take these peanuts and you will like it. And if you want to pay me $15, you can have
a snack box with a couple crackers and a grape.
And we're going to call it a charcuterie board.
Yeah, this is your kid's healthy Lunchable. And we've called it a charcuterie board and priced it at $15.99.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's basically how it goes for sure. All right. So you're wearing your Warriors shirt today. They got the Mavericks game one tonight.
And a text coming in does say that TMZ says the photo of Luka drinking the beer is an old pick. Yeah, and I think we've probably figured it would be because even if we didn't have an issue, the optics of drinking a beer at 9:45 in the morning on game one of the NBA Finals, not great, even if it isn't a problem.
Remember a Meta World Peace, Ron Artest?
Sure do.
He said that he had such bad anxiety when he was in the NBA, like when he was first starting out and like expectations started to be heaped upon him, that he would take a pull. He had like a bottle of Hennessy in his locker. He would
take a pull
before the game to kind of
Marshawn
relax
Lynch
everything.
Said he was doing that as a pregame ritual. Thinking he was like a shot and a half of Henny or something like that.
Jeez. Shot and a half.
I think it was a weird amount. It wasn't like one, but it also wasn't two. I want to say that Marshawn took like a little more than one drink of Henny just to loosen him up before taking those hits.
Mm. Wow. All right, now we're getting travel stories here on the fan text line, 503-250-1080. It says, there was a plane crash in Dallas in the 80s where the plane skidded off the runway hit a tower and split in two. Everybody in the back section of the plane, the smoking section, lived, while nearly everybody in the front non-smoking section died. Smoking literally saved their lives.
Oh, the irony.
Yeah, that is weird. You know, that was that was one of the funniest things, too, is like when you'd go to a restaurant and the smoking section and the non-smoking section was like some invisible line that's like, no, you're fine over here.
No, you have the half glass partitions that like reach up to like your midsection and you're like, okay, I mean, I can see that this section is divided, but they're not separate from air.
And then you just see the smoke go up and right over the top of it into your section. And no, you're good. You're good. You're fine over here. Just that line, that's your non-smoking section.
So they still have, in Europe, they still have like smoking cars on trains, like that you can sit in the train car where smoking is allowed and people do it.
And please tell me they call them hot boxes.
They don't, but they should.
They should.
I like that. Well done. But the problem is you often have to like walk through them to get to a certain, like the dining cart or whatever, or if you just want to like stretch your legs and walk through the train, and you got to open all the doors to do it. So yeah, it's kind of separate, but every time someone walks through, the billows of secondhand smoke that you didn't want to be sitting in on your four-hour train ride just come flying out. I mean, and then there's nowhere to go.
What do?
You just have to sit far away from those smoking cars because it makes your non-smoking car very smoky very quickly.
Sure does. We will talk Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals today. The West gets underway tonight. And I do like this, and I appreciate the NBA for doing this, where we have our staggered days, so we get basketball every day. Warriors-Mavericks tonight. Last night, we were treated to the Miami Heat absolutely destroying the Boston Celtics in the third quarter. That was very reminiscent of a Blazer game there, right? Where usually in the NBA, if you watch the first 5 minutes of a game, you can learn a lot. The closeout of every quarter and how you finish every quarter, especially the third and then the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, you watch, and you can get a good feeling on how that game went. The third quarter last night absolutely doomed the Boston Celtics. Like, if you watched the first 5 minutes of the game, you watch the last 4 minutes of the first half, and even like the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, you would sit there and you would say, wow, Boston won this game. And you had no idea what the score was. You'd be like, Boston won this game. That third quarter was so one-sided and so just dejecting to the Boston Celtics with the run that the Miami Heat had, that it won the game. They blazered them. The Heat blazered the Celtics there.
It's also very reminiscent of what at times the Warriors are capable of, just kind of finding a way to impose a will against their opponent. Because what I felt like last night, it never really felt like the Heat were in any control. And then they kind of started doing the boa constrictor thing against them in the third quarter, where I think the Celtics went the first 6 minutes of the second half not making a field goal. And so it was just like, stop, bucket. And then on top of it, Jimmy Butler was just, he knew he could get to the lane and to the line. And so the Celtics would have these defensive stands where it would seem like they're doing just enough, and then Jimmy would get a foul. And it felt so deflating for Boston, who at the time had built a double-digit lead, that they couldn't hit their own buckets, and then they're just putting Jimmy on the line over and over again. And it just felt like you could see the will and the life and their chances of winning just drain out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. We seen it with our own two eyes. So we'll talk about that game a little bit more. But where we got to start, Seventh Heaven. I mean, or hell. Depending on which Blazer fan you talk to, the lottery, it got felons happening on social media and of every Blazer fan that watched it. Here we go again, folks. Woof. 12-14 on the Fan.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nailed it!
It is Wu-Tang Wednesday. All right, let's talk about it, folks. Let's get it all out there. Get your feelings out there. 503-250-1080. That is a Fan text line. You can find me at Dusty_Hera. You can find Ryan Buckley at the Ryan Buckley on Twitter.
This is true.
The Blazers will get the seventh pick in the NBA draft coming up on June 23rd. We talked about this yesterday at length, breaking down historically what has happened. And the reality of it is, although there was a 37% chance that the Blazers were in the top four, there's a 29% chance that they would end up seventh and a 20% chance, nearly 21% chance, that they were going to end up eighth in the draft. The numbers were saying it was more probable for them to be seven or eight than it was one through four, where individually for any of those spots, it was like a 9% chance, 9.2, 9.4, 9.6. It wasn't very likely that they were going to be in there as much as it was likely that they were going to get jumped. And what I find crazy, and I talked about this yesterday, and I said, well, it's got to end at some point. Well, this year is not the year. Every single year since they changed the lottery odds 4 years ago, every single year, the seventh pick, the seventh worst record in the NBA has ended up in the top four. Every year.
Interesting.
Like, that is a statistically, that's not supposed to happen, that the seventh team continually jumps into that top four. But here we are. That's the way that it happened yet again. And as you kind of sat there and it was like status quo all the way through. And then you got to eight and it's like, oh, eight didn't jump them either. And then seventh rolls around. And you're like, woof, Buzz's girlfriend. There are the Blazers and they miss out. And you saw the look on Dame's face, like Dame's head just kind of cocks back a little bit. And he was like, oh, crap, here we are again. But that shouldn't change kind of what the whole purpose of what the Blazers were doing is, which was they needed to hit a reset button.
Yeah. And here's the thing is, I really like that the lottery is an event because it signifies hope and it signifies for teams that have been struggling, you know, kind of a chance to restart and rebirth. But it's always it's such a weird event, too, because there's exactly one person that walks away from it happy. You know, like you send all these representatives and there's all these people waiting. And really, I mean, I guess there are teams that are happy that maybe get the second or third pick, or the teams that just move up a little bit. But for the most part, people are disappointed they did not win the lottery. And then I think it wasn't until maybe the Zion year when they knew he was going to be the consensus number one. The fact that they have some of the picks there now is a little bit odd to me because the scouting hasn't been done and the interviews haven't been done. And like, obviously we know who they are, but yeah, they're not going to say which teams they like or don't like on that night. Yeah. And the teams aren't going to say who they're interested in. So it's this weird, we can't talk about it, but we're all here in the same room thing. The production has become very odd, but circling back to the Blazers, I think that realistically you knew this was about where you were going to fall. And yeah, the task still remains the same for Cronin and company.
It absolutely does. And this is where it comes down to, if you didn't get into that top four, you go through your draft evaluation process and you have to trust your guys, right? You have to trust the scouts. You have to trust your process and your evaluation of talent as Joe Cronin and Chauncey Billups for which guy fits our system and what Chauncey wants to do. Right? And there will be like there is one thing that we need to say about this draft class is that, yeah, you don't have a bunch of top heavy guys, right? It's not this top heavy draft where like 1 through 15 is all loaded with guys that are going to be dudes and players. There's some hit and miss, but what they do say is that there's a lot of length in this draft, right? And that's the one thing the Blazers need. Defense,
need a lot
and
of
length.
It, yeah.
And so at seven, you can trade that piece and potentially get a number two, and that helps facilitate the number two come over, right? And to help Damian Lillard. But at the same time, we talked about yesterday when you weren't here, Buck, but, you know, if you're trading for Jeremy Grant, Jeremy Grant is not a number two.
Like Jeremy Grant's a number three on a winning team.
Or four.
Yeah, or four.
Yeah,
yes.
Depending on who's hot on that given night, right? Like, depending on your matchup, if Ant and Jeremy Grant are your 3 and 4, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to win a lot of games. But you need a number two that
you
is
still
a
do.
Star.
And if you look at the real contenders right now, everyone has at least three deep that they can really rely on and maybe four. I mean, I think that people didn't expect it necessarily coming from the Mavericks, but now that you've got Luka and Jalen Brunson and Finney Smith and, you know, a Dinwiddie who can chip in on a night. Like, that's barely been enough to get them there over, you know, beating the Suns in seven. But you look at the other teams and the ways they have to beat you. The Warriors still have a crew of three or four guys that can get it done, and it's not all that different for the Celtics or for the Heat. They have multiple guys. I mean, their second-best guy is better than the Blazers' second-best guy on all those teams, and so is their third. And then Anthony Simons is probably in that conversation, but you do need a better two, big time.
Yep. And that becomes a big challenge for Joe Cronin, and that's why he tried to build as much salary cap space as he did. He gave this team a lot of flexibility to make some moves and retain their own talent, too. If you want to roll back with Nurk and you want to roll Anthony Simons back and match any of the contracts, they have the ability to do that. But you also have massive trade exception. You have Eric Bledsoe's contract. There are still pieces that they can trade that will be attractive to teams that want to rebuild or feel that they're still quite a ways away. As P1 Tyler points out, like if you're a Magic fan, and that may be the only Magic fan in this area, you get the number one pick and you're just saying, all right, yeah, we got the number one pick. Hopefully they don't screw this one up, you know? Like, it legitimately.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is this is a draft that I'm not even sure. I don't know what spot you want in it because everyone, you know, is like would you want the spot that gives you the shot at getting Chet?
Two. I want two.
Right. Well, does Chet go, well, okay, what if number one doesn't take Chet and he's still on the board?
Well, then you say, hey, the Blazers, our number one was gone.
They might have dodged one here because if they got up to top four and somehow Chet was in there, Do they have to take Chet? Now he'll definitely be gone by seven.
Yeah.
And hopefully someone who deserved to be a top four or five pick has slipped to them.
Yeah. It was not the way the Blazer fans wanted it to go. I think that if you are Joe Cronin right now, you're on the phones and you're already shopping that deal. Or you're not even on the phones. You're just sitting in at the draft combine, which is going on today. It's like, hey, we had the lottery last night. The combine's today. And you're talking with people and seeing how you can move that. And that's not to say that they shouldn't, or, you know, you're not going to get a good player at seven because there are good players that will be in this draft, but this is the crapshoot. And Dwight James, who we had on yesterday, he said it best. It's, you know, it's who you draft, right? Like you can find, there's a diamond in the rough in every draft, and everybody will sit there and point to the guy that's drafted behind whomever the Blazers pick and say, I should have drafted him. Well, you know, that's why so many other teams passed on Bam Adebayo too, right? Right? A lot of it is circumstance and fit.
Steph Curry was there at number seven, just saying.
Oh, do you want to end this on a high note for Blazer fans?
Yeah, absolutely.
I looked up some of the draft picks that have been drafted at seven.
There's some good ones, some really good ones.
There are. John Havlicek.
Havlicek stole the ball.
He did. Pat Riley.
Pretty good.
Chris Mullen.
Also good.
Damon Stoudemire.
Uh-huh.
Rip Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
Eric Gordon.
Okay.
Yeah, okay is the perfect way to say that one.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's a good player.
But he was, and you know what? He should have been a piece on an NBA Finals team if the Rockets could have figured it out against the Warriors, and they didn't.
Steph Curry.
Yep.
And then Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah.
Yes. Just last year,
yeah,
by the Golden State Warriors at seven. So now I just want to remind everybody, I started that list from 1962 with John Havlicek and went to last year, and I named eight players.
So,
but there are good players that can be found.
The hit rate, not great, but they are out there.
But yeah, they are out there, and that's what it all comes down to, is evaluation. And talent evaluation and fit, right? Fit is so important. And we lose sight of that so much, is that like everybody in the world would have loved to, and you can sit there and I'll bring up Bam Adebayo where the Blazers drafted Zach Collins over Bam Adebayo. The Blazers draft Bam. Does he fit with Terry Stotts' system and the way that he played?
No. And that's the weird thing. Because, I mean, you can say the same thing for football recruits and drafts, too. Like, the way that, you know, a Sean McVay team is going to use somebody is way different than like, the way that, like, a Mike Tomlin team is going to use somebody.
But to the point of, would it have been better than Zach Collins? Hell yes, it would have.
Yes.
And I think, like, we can all agree on that. And those two things can both be true at the same time. And this is where I really do hope that Chauncey Billups and Joe Cronin as they say they have been and they say they want to do moving forward, I truly do hope that there is – it's a two-way street there, right? And I hope that he does have the ear of Joe Cronin. Joe Cronin is listening to what Chauncey Billups is saying he wants, and there is a middle ground, and there truly is a conversation about what guy fits best, because it feels like what was happening in Portland was the guy that Neil loved was the guy that they drafted, because he was the judge, jury, and executioner, especially after Paul Allen died, right? And when Paul Allen died, they didn't need to clear anything with anybody else. It became whomever Neil O'Shea wanted.
Is he Neil's guy or is he not? Yeah.
They got him, right? And so now I really do hope that there is a collaboration, there is a conversation, and you know, that's not to say that Neil just dismissed any and all of his scouts.
But that it's more of a collaborative effort on
what is
the collective vision here? What do we all see fitting together? And how does it all work in pieces? Not like, oh, well, you like this guy and that's who I guess I have to roll with.
Because, you know, this is a great example of it. It's going to be the most annoying damn thing you hear over the next week, maybe even 2 or 3 weeks, depending on how long the NBA wants to drag this damn thing out. But I'm already getting sick of hearing heat culture. You flip on the radio, you flip on your TV, all you hear is heat culture, right? Jimmy Butler mentioned it at the end of it in his post-game interview.
Well, how much of the heat culture now is Jimmy Butler culture? I mean, what, you know?
Well, but this is the thing. Heat culture is a collaboration between Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, and their entire organization from the tippy top all the way down to the players, right? And everybody's buying in, finding their role, and it's a collaborative effort. It's a collaborative effort.
Well, it's not a one-piece fix either.
Yeah, and it's a collaborative effort between Spoelstra and Pat Riley to find the guys that fit that culture, find the guys that will buy in. You don't have to do everything great, and I think Jimmy Butler's a prime example of this. You don't have to do everything great. Hell, you don't even have to be good outside shooter. But what you have to do is you have to be elite at a couple of things, and you need to buy into those every single possession. And that's what the Miami Heat do. And now that we hear heat culture, and we should probably get used to it. We'll talk about that game one last night because it was pretty damn impressive. Here's Buck. That is the fan text line. Like, I love this. We have a lot of people that are just saying, like, this text just says, no, Blazers are effed.
What a positive outlook after the draft lottery.
Yeah. And then this one just says, you know, hey, I have no other course except for to be optimistic about this right now. I appreciate
that's
that one,
like
too.
It.
Like, whatever, it sucks.
The reality is they're not in a great spot right now. We can all agree. But when you're not in this spot, then you get a higher pick and you have a better chance of starting to build something new. So, you know what? The one that said the Blazers are effed, they might be right. But there's got to be a lot of steps to be taken to make sure they're effed before we can rule out that's going to be the case.
You have no idea what players are going to be what. That truly is it.
Totally.
I mean, it. You just don't know.
The last two MVPs were second round picks, were they not? I mean, Giannis, was he late first?
He was, I think, 15th.
Yeah.
14th or 15th.
He wasn't top 10, like I know that.
No. Everybody
and neither
like,
is Jokic. So clearly, you know, franchises can be built on the backs of players that are not a top six pick. So you're not totally effed here.
Well, I'll tell you, like, we all get wrapped up over, hey, what is this player going to, what is X player going to be? This draft isn't very deep, yada, yada, yada. Look at the guy who took over the damn game last night. You find yourself a dog and you scout him. And who thought Jimmy Butler, when he was drafted 30th overall, was going to be the dude who scores 41 in the conference finals and is a guy who can take over a playoff game and gets better in the playoffs? He is better in the playoffs than he is in the regular season, which is incredible to see, statistically speaking. He takes charge in the playoffs. Guy might be my favorite player in the NBA right now. I absolutely love what Jimmy Butler is doing. He is all over the place. And he's a guy that does whatever your coach and team asks, as long as he gets that effort from everybody else, a la the Minnesota Timberwolves, where he just said, F this, I'm going to beat the starting lineup with the number twos, and I'm going to go and just work all of these guys single-handedly. He's got that little bit of dog in him. So you never know.
And there are a lot of guys that have a little bit of dog in him, but I don't know that there's anyone else in the NBA who's going to go out there and pull that move in front of the coaches, the executives, the rest of the team, and say, actually, yeah, I am going to run with the twos, and I'm gonna whoop y'all's butts while I do it. I mean, he's a different breed of dog. I mean, he's pitbull. He's not your golden retriever. Like,
no.
I love that about him, but I think he has probably the strongest mental edge of anybody in the NBA.
So let's calm down, and then when they screw it up, then that's when we can panic. How about that?
Sure, at least wait to
truce?
Panic.
Can we truce on that?
Let's kick the panic down the road.
That's right. We can panic later.
Yeah.
There's plenty of time for it.
We have infinite time to panic.
Yeah. That ain't going to work, man. That ain't going to fly. People are, the panic is going to happen now.
Well, it gives us less to talk about on radio, too.
Well, and this is the exciting part, though, and this is one thing that we can actually look forward to, is that as we are kind of this returning to normalcy here and, you know, media is available to go to things, we're going to get to see as the Blazers bring people in for workouts over the next handful of weeks before the June 23rd draft, we're going to see the guys that they're bringing in, where you can get an idea of who it's going to be that they are targeting and who they want to draft.
Yeah, what does the net look like that they're casting?
At seven, it's going to be wide open, and there's going to be a lot of guys that come through here. And in this range here, the Blazers have been successful in this range. Different scouting departments, different administrations and management that has been running the team in several different years, but it's been several different iterations that the Blazers have had success, you know, drafting six or seven, whether it's Dame or, you know, a little bit later and you want to go throw CJ McCollum into that. They have evaluating talent. If you trust your process, you can find some gems.
Yeah, the text
Let's
line
not freak out.
The text line here telling me the Warriors fan telling me not to panic, zip it, Rye Guy from the Bay.
Yeah,
which
Rye
is
guy.
Fair. I understand you don't want to hear it from my championship winning mouth over here. But that being said, the Warriors put what they have together with all draft picks seventh or below. I mean, no, Andrew Wiggins that they have now acquired in a trade was a number one.
James Wiseman,
Steph. James Wiseman's not on the roster. He's injured.
No.
Steph, 7. Clay, 11. Draymond,
second round.
I mean, yeah. Those are the pillars of the team. And then even the other pieces they put around him, Jordan Poole, not top Ooh. 10. Jonathan Kuminga, 7. I mean, Ooh. It's all done with non-top draft picks.
Spin zone here. What you do is you just call Bob Myers when you're on the clock and say, hey, who'd you take here?
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, one time, the Blazers... One up to Bob Myers was because the Warriors wanted Dame Lillard, and the Blazers drafted him one pick before the Warriors pick.
Why would they want a Damian Lillard?
Because he's awesome and a hometown guy.
You're damn right. All right, let's get to it then. The Heat culture, Jimmy Butler, the takeover last night. I don't know. That third quarter was something else. We wrap up hour number one with Eastern Conference Finals, game one. Guys, it's only one game. Dusty and Friends on the Fan. All right, what it came down to last night in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals was the third quarter, 39-14. My goodness. It was a beatdown in one quarter where the Miami Heat just flexed their muscles on the Boston Celtics. And you saw how much Marcus Smart means to the Celtics, how much Al Horford is so weird to say that at this point, how much Al Horford in this playoff run has meant to the Boston Celtics, right? Because he's out in health and safety protocols. You got what they're calling a sprained foot for Marcus Smart, who is the defensive player of the year in the NBA.
And he's already been banged up this playoffs. He's already missed games with other injuries. And so tough for them to see that because he's, in addition to being one of the best defenders in the game, he's also such an emotional leader for them, it seems like.
And he 100% is, and he's the guy that brings the ball up the floor. And if you look at what happened in that third quarter where it was 39-14, I mean, just think of it in these terms. In that quarter alone, the Boston Celtics had 5 turnovers. They had, or excuse me, 7 turnovers. 5 of them came from Jason Tatum, 2 more from Jaylen Brown. You put the ball in your point guard's hands coming up the floor.
Happens a lot less, doesn't it?
It happens a lot less, right?
Maybe you should just give it to Pritchard.
So many ridiculous, just lazy passes where Jimmy Butler is able just to pick off. There was like 3 of them. There were 3 of them where he either just straight up stepped in the line, just intercepted it, or the ball is getting booted around and he just picked it up and went to the other end.
Yeah, a lot of them were like, it was like they were entry passes to start their offense. You know, yeah. It was like they couldn't even get the first pass in. It was not pretty.
And that quarter just went, it went sideways in a hurry. And when it goes downhill that quickly, we've seen it here in Portland several times. How many times has the third quarter been the bugaboo for the Blazers? Right? You have a great first quarter. You sit there and you can say, you know, at the half, it felt like Boston was in control and like they were going to cruise in this thing to a double digit victory. Now Miami's going, dude, hey, we're without Kyle Lowry. So you can say Marcus Smart and Al Horford all you want. We don't have Kyle Lowry either. But I'll say those two guys in the way that they've been playing have far outweighed the impact of Kyle Lowry, who's been out a ton in the postseason.
And it feels like I'd be interested to see if there's a correlation, but it feels like the teams that are the most successful in the third quarter throughout the season really are the teams that end up making the deepest playoff runs. And I don't know if this Heat team has been doing that specifically, but what it tells you is it's all about adjustments. I mean, when you go and blow a team out in the third quarter of a game, it's not because you came into the game with the best game plan. It's because you figured out during the game the best place to pivot to. And that's where Spoelstra deserves a ton of credit. And I'm not saying that Ime Udoka isn't there yet, but as a first-year head coach being in this position, he hasn't been through those battles and through those fights and in those spots where Spoelstra didn't panic. But, you know, his team was down 12, 13, 14 points, and they win going away in what could have been 30 if they left their starters in.
Yes, and this is this will be interesting to see how much of it was, as you say, Ime Udoka in his first playoff series. And really, you have these guys have been around for a long time, right? The Boston Celtics and Tatum and Jaylen Brown, it's crazy how much success that they have had for being so young in their respective careers, right? But how much of it is going to come down to the coaching aspect? Because the conference finals under Brad Stevens too, that was where they hit the roadblock. Mm-hmm. This has been the roadblock for them. And now can you get over the hump with Ime Udoka, the first year head coach, going up against one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the entire NBA right now, in Eric Spoelstra.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take coaching and you can say all that, but if Ime Udoka is not, could he call timeout and stop the bleeding? Maybe that stops the bleeding, but boy, we go back to the lazy passes that you said, simple entry passes, right?
Yeah.
Where you're just telegraphing everything. It was totally lazy. That's not on. That is not on
whatsoever.
One bit your coach.
But how is it then that the other team is able to come out and punk you by 21 points in one frame?
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, that 15
well, that's the other
points,
thing.
The way that it happened, the looks that he was getting, when you get him running downhill, this is why I love Jimmy Butler. I absolutely love what this guy is doing because you see his last 2 points of the game too. He got it with like 35 seconds to go where they could have ran out the clock. He just went down and he dunked it because he was like, no, I'm getting 40 in this game.
He's not shy about it.
I'm going to put a 40 spot on that scoreboard. And I'm not going to let you forget about it. Now he's had a 40-point game in each one of the first 3 series. And that list, I saw that the list is very short and very distinguished of people who've been able to do that.
I think it also just speaks to his drive and his wills that the best games he has as a professional are in the playoffs. When everyone else has run down, when the pressure's turned up, it's when he's at his best. It seems to fit his personality, and it doesn't surprise me anymore.
As it is, it's just one game. And that is one thing. Pump the brakes. If Boston comes out and they play like they did for 3 of those 4 quarters, for all 4.
They looked like the better team in the first half, not just because of the score. They looked like they had it more together.
And I think that one part of it is that third quarter is going to be huge in this entire series because of the fact that heading into game 1, the Heat were, plus 68 in the third quarter. They'd outscored their opponents by 68 points in the third quarter throughout the playoffs so far.
A little bit of a role reversal there.
They have got to find a way to stop that. If you're Boston, you can't let them run away from you like they did in game 1, like they've been doing to everybody else in that third quarter. all series long. You have got to put the brakes on. And if you look, the way that that game, I thought they were going to come back in the fourth quarter too. They got it down to 10 and you're sitting there like, okay, we're at the 4 minute mark. But then it was boom, boom, two big shots back to cruising for Miami. But if Boston puts together for four quarters, they steal home court in game two.
And they very much have the talent to do so.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to it. Our friend of the day is Joel Gunderson. He is an author. He is local. He's written the book, literally wrote the book on international basketball in the NBA and Boise State football. He's also a writer for ScoopDuck.com. So we can get Ducks. We can get the Boise State. And this is a tough one for Oregon fans because it's like, the chant for Oregon fans is, who do we hate? Boise State, you know? And you get Boise State and you can get your Duck Talk. We'll talk with Joel Gunderson next. This is Dusty and Friends on The Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.